about getting back into the system. Happened at a good time during the executive session, but like when I was in the middle of talking or something. Where did he go? Your log, shut me up.
They'd still be able to hear it.
Oh, with that? Oh, the, absolutely, really? Well, yeah, with the, if I had my,
We have one person hanging at the mailboxes.
Okay, can you communicate with them to let them know?
I told them before not to worry.
Okay.
Languishing in the waiting.
Okay. Well, I think, Ryan, I think we probably can get started.
We're ready.
Yep, so we're ready if you want to call the meeting to order.
Sure, this is to call the Urban Renewal Agency meeting to order for Monday, September 20th, 2021. Peggy, roll call, please.
Sawyer?
Here.
Parker?
Here.
Yes. Goble?
Here.
Oteo?
Here.
Jacoby?
Here.
Collette?
Here.
And Hall?
Here.
Okay, everyone.
Okay, we have two things that we're going to cover. The first is the South Beach US 101 refinement plan, and our focus of the discussion tonight or this afternoon is both on the property that's owned by the agency at 35th and US 101, as well as the kind of the overall financial picture for the closeout of the urban renewal district. Second issue, we'll give you a quick update and make sure we're on the right path on the electric vehicle charging stations. And so at this point,
we're going to do the consent calendar, I thought.
Oh.
The minutes just came in today, so they'll be on the next URA consent calendar.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I think, Ryan, I think we're ready to go on the first item, if you're ready for that.
Did we approve the minutes on the September 7th?
Yeah, no, they are not attached. They just came in today, so.
Oh, they're not attached.
Yeah, so they'll be on the next agenda.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
So if the first item is the refinement plan, I'll turn it over to Derek.
Thank you. Derek Tokos, Community Development. This is the second of the two September briefings. What we're hoping to accomplish today is going to go through three different redevelopment concepts for the 35th and 101 site, and then talk a little bit about, you know, where we're at financially with South Beach in terms of funding, and a couple of different funding approaches, whether or not you want to go pay as you go or you want to fully leverage all available funding between now and when the district closes to new projects at the end of 2025. The concepts you're going to be seeing have been informed by a fair amount of public outreach that we've done down there, and discussions with various stakeholders, developers, business people in the city, just to vet viability and ensure we're picking up an appropriate range of options. I think with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Emily with Eco Northwest. I know they have a PowerPoint presentation that they want to walk through with you.
Yeah. Let me make sure I'm sharing the right screen here. Okay, well, Derek covered our agenda. Just as a reminder of where we're at, we've got another 2 months of this planning process. And we're really getting into some really interesting parts of it, looking at the 35th site and thinking about the project package that we want to advance. And in the next few months, you'll see a draft plan, and we'll be finalizing that plan. So today we're talking about the 35th site. I just want to say that I have had my head in this site for the past month, and I think it's super exciting. I have been talking with people across South Beach. I've been talking with developers, potential tenants. We're really thinking a lot about what this redevelopment of this site could mean for South Beach, that it really could be really a hub for South Beach that the community has not had for services and restaurants and grocery stores potentially. And this is a quote that came from one of the interviewees for our project. I just took it whole cloth and stuck it in here because I thought it made a lot of sense. The agency and the city have been thinking a lot about this. The city and ODOT have made this huge investment in US 101 that it's making the area feel much more pedestrian friendly. And is really opening the eyes of some of the developers and property owners that are occupying space along the corridor. So one thing that we like to do when we're thinking about a site, when we're thinking about a site is talk about the type of story that that site could tell for the area. So the types of things I've been hearing in interviews and in thinking about the site a lot is that the 35th site, 2.3 acre site, right, at 35th and 101, could be the neighborhood hub for South Beach. It could provide a gateway for South Beach, both in terms of South Beach and Newport from the south, really. And it could be a gateway, not just with signage and art, it could also be for businesses and buildings could all create that gateway. It would help to support the surrounding businesses by driving more people to the area. There are a lot of businesses that everybody in Newport knows about and they visit, but that this site could help hook them all together. In terms of a restaurant type of space, it could provide a lot more choice for people that are in South Beach and south of South Beach and that visit the area for different types of food options and also spaces for people to start a business. And just a generally a gathering space and a place to stop that would hook the different destinations of South Beach together. So what we're doing right now is looking at potential alternatives for the site. How would the buildings be configured on the site? How would they relate to each other? How would they relate to the street and to the US 101 investments? And as part of that, we're doing outreach with potential tenants or developers of the site to see what kind of things they would be wanting to know more about and getting their initial feedback on the different concepts. We're also, as part of the virtual open house that I think is going online this week, we're gauging community support through another survey. And as you recall, during the last survey, we got over 300 responses. So we're getting really into the details with the community on this site to vet the specific concepts. Then the next step will be a set of implementation considerations for the agency. That will likely be an RFQ that the agency would release in early 2022 or mid-2022. And we can help to craft a set of development objectives to help hone the concepts for the site that developers will be responding to. So what we're looking for today from you all is thinking about major red flags and thinking about what options you think have the most potential that we should craft into a set of objectives for the next phase of this work. This is a slide showing all the outreach we've completed so far. We've talked with existing restaurants and existing property owners as well in the area. We've talked with a few, We talked with JC Market. We also talked with a couple of potential developers that both work in the restaurant and retail space all around Oregon. There's still a decent number of conversations that still need to occur with the other South Beach businesses in the area to see whether they might be interested in being a part of this concept and their feedback on the concept in general. And other Newport restaurateurs, I think, thinking about what types of restaurants they might be interested in seeing here. So overall, this site is highly visible. There's lots and lots of through traffic. When I talk with developers, they say it's a big opportunity just through that through traffic alone, that a lot of people just drive US 101 on trips and that it provides a highly visible location. It's really close to other South Beach destinations on foot, on bike, and by car. And it could be the southern node for a potential multimodal bike ped path network in the area. There are also some challenges to the site that I've heard a lot about in conversations with developers. It's far from the existing hubs of Newport. It's far from downtown and other commercial activities. And in particular for a grocery store, grocery stores want to be near other things. And so that potentially presents a challenge and something that the agency will need to overcome. The surrounding uses are pretty arterial and pretty industrial feeling. And that some developers are interested in seeing and sort of seeing a building that they can adaptively reuse. The alternative, which people also responded to, is that the city can remove the buildings from the site, and that also provides an opportunity just to have a completely blank slate. Stemming from our survey and from the focus groups and the other stakeholder outreach that we've done so far in this project, these are the development concepts that have emerged. Specialty grocery stores, different types of restaurants, like including counter service restaurants or food carts, general merchandiser or other types of retail that could provide services to the people that are visiting the area, especially people that are at the RV parks or South Beach State Park that need some of those things. And then also stopover amenities for the bike path network, like a restroom or drinking water or bike racks. So now I'm going to present to you the three concepts. The first one is the Go Big concept. We've been in discussions with these two property owners about their interest in potentially being a part of a larger development concept on the site. That is TBD, just want to say. They have not committed to anything, and it would be a lot of additional conversations needed. But the general arc of this concept is there would be a large anchor on the northern agency-owned parcel, about 30,000 square feet. That could be something like a Bi-Mart, or potentially a large grocery store, although that is challenging given that it feels, based on my conversations with people so far, that Newport might be a little bit over-groceried. But because the micro-restaurant concepts was so important to people, we did look at this as a potential to have it be a little bigger concept that would include the southern parcel, but that would be totally contingent upon those property owners being interested in partnership. The benefits of this is that it would create a real gateway. It would connect with the ferry slip street closure and would allow for just that whole side of the street to be revitalized. This was also a grocery store was the most popular concept for this site based on the first survey that we did. And there's a couple things that the agency needs to think about when looking at this. The first is the anchor is the most important thing. The grocery store is the most important thing that the agency would need to start with. And it's likely going to be kind of difficult to find somebody, and they're going to want some subsidies. So that's as part of the RFP, something to craft and hone in on. And the second thing is thinking about the tenant mix in the restaurant space. So you might want to look at other case studies of other concepts like this. It seems like the sweet spot is between 8 to 10 restaurant tenants, or other retail concepts that could be part of that southern space. I'm going to present the next one. The second concept is a food destination. It's anchored by a smaller grocery store. This would be something more like, I don't know if you all have been up to the Fresh Foods in Manzanita or Cannon Beach. It would be something smaller, likely with a larger grab-and-go presence, which often can make that grocery store a lot more money than the grocery items themselves. And then there'd be a micro restaurant pod, maybe 5 or so restaurants, maybe 3 to 5 restaurants, and along with food carts. And one idea that has come up with this is, could you get a brewery that could anchor those micro restaurants and be their property manager that could help to figure out which tenants make the best mix, keep everybody open certain hours, and work with that grocery store to maybe those restaurants could use certain items from the grocery store or get wholesale orders. So there's some synergies in this concept that I think so far in my conversations, people are pretty excited about this one. It doesn't create as much competition for the existing grocery stores in Newport. I think a key conversation to have would be with South Beach Grocery and Fish Market to see if they'd be interested in being a part of this concept. And then the third alternative would be a mixed retail, a mix of smaller retail concepts with micro restaurants and food carts. Some of those concepts that people brought up were like healthcare, so like something like a Zoom Care or an urgent care clinic. A post office was something we heard a lot about. And then also professional services, any kind. But the general piece here is you'd want to have locally serving retail that would be for primarily aimed towards South Beach workers and residents. Of course, people visiting the area will use it as well, but the retail shouldn't be gift shops and other types of things like that, is what we've heard in the outreach so far. And then on every one of these concepts, you see these green lines. That's the existing multimodal path network. And every concept has a publicly accessible restroom, drinking water, bike racks. Who knows where that actually would end up being on the site. Right now, we're showing it kind of removed from the rest of the restaurants. But I think key to this is, can you make this a stopover on this multimodal path concept that we've been talking about? This is a case study of a food cart pod in Portland called the Barley Pod. It's anchored by Bearlick Brew Beer Company. And you can see they've got this kind of gift shop and tap room in the middle of it. And Bearlick actually runs the cart pod. They've got about, I think they have 10 food carts there, and it's a pretty successful pod and could be, you know, there's a couple examples of these around the state that are interesting to look at. I did an initial.
Can I just ask, where is Barley Pod?
It's on It's about 60th and Gleason and Northeast Gleason in Portland.
Thanks.
Just wanted to do a really high level overview of considerations of things to think about between these different uses. I would say the community support is key. The specialty grocery and the micro restaurants received the highest support in all our conversations. But those ones may also be particularly hard to find the right operator. Whereas if you were to attract a Bi-Mart, they would just occupy the site and it wouldn't require ongoing management of a variety of tenants. The outlay of the construction is likely to be the highest for the general merchandiser and the specialty grocery, and probably less so for a food cart pod, and maybe less so for retailers, depending on what that is. And then tenant management, just ongoing curation of the concept is key for those food cart pods. There's actually one that's being located in Lincoln City called the Pines Dine, and they're doing something really similar on the southern end of Lincoln City that would be interesting to be looking at. And just thinking about entrepreneurship for your community members, I would say the micro restaurants and food carts and some of the retail concepts have the highest potential for helping those small businesses have a place that's highly visible to land. Next steps, I think the city will be doing some additional outreach, depending on what you all say, makes the most sense. Demoing the remaining buildings with the money that you have in reserve, and then thinking about an RFQ in 2022, selecting developer, and then getting whatever contribution the agency is going to do before your deadline in 2025. So, hoping to hear from you all about your thoughts on red flags, you know, perspective that you've got, which looks the most promising, and any questions you have on any of the concepts. I don't know how you all do the, should I call on people? Ryan Parker? Hi, Ryan.
Sure, I pressed too many reactions at once. Sorry. I was so overwhelmed by your proposal. So I noticed the Pines has a central highway-facing covered dining area. Is that the anchor tenant as well in that building that they're constructing?
Yeah, I actually think it's a central dining covered dining area. And that's something I've been thinking about, too, for this site is in our grocery.
South line. Beach is in the prevailing winter wind and rains. So to take a page from the place that Aaron introduced us all to in Albany, where they have a covered area, if you want to sit indoors, I mean, in the old times, maybe after COVID, we can revisit this, but having a covered area with good ventilation, let's call it, that works for now, is an integral, because people aren't going to want to hang out when it's raining sideways.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great feedback. Yeah, to add that into each of the outdoor eating concepts. Aaron?
My internet's glitching, so if I freeze up, apologies. I was out there this weekend, and I think it's going to be really important that any development understands that there's two frontages. There's the 101 on one side, and then the other side is no longer quote unquote the back. So I was just thinking, as this is being discussed, it's going to be important that, you know, if a grocery or someone comes in and then the one side is treated as the back, it's going to be very unwelcoming and not inviting to people wanting to walk along the multi-use path and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And especially thinking about the access on that multi-use path, you know, not keeping them fully removed from the rest of the concept. So would there be a way to bring some of that activity to Ferry Slip?
And then, you know, where that road was blocked off and now it's dirt, I still think that's an opportunity for one of those. I can't remember what city going up I-5, you know, they've got one of those berms and they've planted it in a way that's, you know, welcome to whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I still think that's an opportunity there.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cynthia?
Yeah, thank you. I think the idea of having a small medical clinic or maybe a smaller urgent care is a really good one. Of course, the grocery store has been the most widely demanded, and I think it ought to be a decent sized one. You know, I was looking at the second and third presentations, the options, I mean, and I see that you have nothing on the map for that lower southern segment. That could still be used, right? It's just...
Yeah, and it may be that those property owners decide to do something on their own. That first concept kind of shows a fast-tracked partnership over the next 3 years. And when we talked to Hoover's, they were pretty interested in doing some rehab on their building.
Oh, and sure.
Some official conversations.
And can you tell me how the city would collect rent on this, for how long and how much rent might we be able to realize from this project, and could it be plowed back into something else?
Yeah, it really depends on how the city wants or the agency wants to structure it. If the agency wants to sell the property and then the developer, I mean, you'd get your money and then do with it what you wanted to do, potentially at some kind of write down because you're trying to attract certain mixed uses, or you could set it up as a ground lease. And some that can be pretty desirable for certain developers, not everybody. Some developers want to control the site. And it really, I mean, I don't have the number off the top of my head of what you, it would really depend on the exact mix of uses and what the rents would be, but it is an option for the city in the long term to control the site. And it also gives maybe a little bit more leverage as to what goes on there.
Okay. You know, and a little bit south of this is a strip mall with several businesses in it and a gymnasium. And I think there's either one or two dentists in that area too, that's south of this on 101. Maybe they could be complementary in some way. I'm not sure what, but I know a post office would be extremely welcome in South Beach. And you said you had talked to one grocery store, and that was JC Market.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pick them, and what did they say?
They, I think, mainly talked about the competitive landscape within the area. They thought that a smaller grocery store could potentially work here. They were concerned about additional traffic driven by people commuting, going south to a specialty grocer and more traffic on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would be worth talking to in a little bit more detail, but I wouldn't say that they're super interested in being a part of this concept so far. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that a grocery store would want to have other businesses around it. Would that be like for foot traffic or?
From what I've heard from some of the, I've talked to probably four developers through the course of this project. Just general retail tenants want to be near other retail tenants for trip chains. So like you go out and do a couple of things at once. It's funny how you kind of see sometimes there's like a Safeway and a Fred Meyer and they're actually like really close to each other and you kind of wonder about that, but that's kind of the story is like there's Newport has it. A lot of communities have this kind of concentration of retail. But I think there are other, you know, Bi-Mart sometimes locate kind of farther away from other retailers because that's more their model, is they have everything. So you don't need, you come there to get a bunch of different items.
Do you know how long the season would be for food carts? Like 9 months maybe, or?
Maybe I mean, Ryan was saying, I think that if you have a good indoor covered space, you could potentially have year round use. I think your lowest season is probably going to be like a Tuesday in February. So the nice thing about a food cart pod, though, is they don't have to necessarily be open all the time. They can also be seasonal. So you can have some of your food carts be there just for, you know, 5 months in the peak summer months, and then they can move on. You would want to have a core group that was there all the time, but you could have some seasonal usage as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's all very exciting, I think. Thank you.
Ryan, feel free to just speak up too. I don't need to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not sure how you all do it, but.
My mom was an elementary school teacher, so I'm pretty good at coloring within the lines usually. So I know residents expressed in the first few surveys about a gas station. Would that fit in any of these footprints? I asked because we undergrounded the utilities there. So if we had a smaller fueling station in South Beach, that would reduce bridge trips. Mm-hmm. As was a concern by the JC Market folks. And then at the same time, they'd be able to plug right into that high tension line there and provide, you know, either a private company provide, you know, high speed charging for EVs. Because as this plot is developed, more and more of those federal guidelines for a more electrified fleet are going to be becoming reality. And so brand new build outs don't happen often. And so I wondered, can we satisfy both needs and have a smaller, like if you take the normal footprint of a typical AMPM or ARCO or whatever, and then cut it by a third where you have maybe four pumps or whatever, six pumps instead of 12 or 24, would that fit into any of these scenarios? And if they do, which one?
I think it would. We've actually was talking with Derek about a couple of other sites. One is at the 40th and 101 intersection might be actually a better contender for a gas station. You could do potentially a fuller footprint there. That would leave your 35th site area to be kind of more of a neighborhood feel and have less traffic just coming and going for the gas. But I think it could be an option too. But I think with signalizing 40th, which is one of the projects you've seen and we're going to talk about in addition, I think that would actually really improve that area's potential for a gas station. So that's one thing we talked about. I think it would, I mean, looking at the map, like I could imagine there being, you could imagine a gas station kind of where this retail is and then leaving your corner or maybe the gas station here, but it just creates a different feel for the gateway of the area that isn't so kind of village feeling.
Well, currently there's several tax lots at 40th and Harborton, and they're currently creating Scott's Broom seeds for the 22nd century. So most of those parcels are, according to the assessor's records, anywhere locally owned. So maybe we can get some buy-in on a purchase price for some of those lots. I can't imagine, though, that putting in an ARCO would be possible, you know, without a signalized intersection. Mm-hmm. Lincoln County has the only, you know, intersection in the state that involves a McDonald's, you know, on the coast anyway. And so I can imagine that a big gas station would be welcomed, but I agree the concept would be a little mixed if we put one up there. However, it would be a big expense for the city and the agency to obtain multiple tax lots and do the signalization, not knowing what ODOT's timeline is, versus just sticking one in, you know, up in that general area, possibly in the spot that Arrow currently occupies. I assume that they're going to be moving down by Coast Column. Is that correct?
I don't know that Arrow Heating's made a decision as to where they're going to go. They're kind of waiting to see. I talked to Garrett just a little bit ago. He's kind of waiting to see how this plays out, as is the landowner, the Bungays. He does have property down by the Tryon piece there, just south of 40th, where he could redevelop that. He just hasn't called that yet.
Yeah. Thanks.
Any other comments on this? Any?
Yeah, I have a question. I have a comment.
Sure.
I'll lower my hand. This is a Dietmar. So I like your concepts. I'm really amazed at the amount of parking that we need. And it seems like over half of the property is consumed by parking. And I thought this was the example you showed us in Portland didn't have any parking at all. It was all street parking.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how much parking really we need in this concept. And maybe that's because of code. I don't know. But I'm not real fond of the box store concept. You know, that first one you presented. Just doesn't seem to fit for me. If we're trying to create a village kind of concept there, I do like the idea of bringing the other Arrow Heating and Hoover's into the mix and trying to get them to become part of this development. That's a great idea. I think you should continue to pursue that. The other thing that I think the second concept is, I'd like the smaller grocery store, and I do like your food carts. One thing you're going to have to really take into account, I know you don't live on the coast, but wind, northwest wind, and especially in the summertime, becomes a major concern here. And it's kind of whipped through here. So mm-hmm. The designs you have really doesn't really address wind too much. The third concept kind of is more sheltered, kind of walking environment where you have little micro pods and small retail and, you know, pod food carts and some kind of bigger, what you call Zoom Care. I don't know what Zoom Care is. But it seems to work better for me as far as being able to walk around and you get more opportunities. But a gas station on the site, unlike Ryan, I don't think I would like to see a gas station on the site. There's some other properties in South Beach that probably are more suitable for that kind of activity. And there's a lot of undeveloped property. We already have, four major gas stations in town now, with Freddie just building one in town. So another gas station might not make it. I know they built a bank across the street one time and went belly up and closed their doors. Now a welding shop. So I would encourage you to look at the weather a little bit closer when you do your layouts for your pods and things. I do like the smaller pods idea a lot. And the trellis idea, I don't think it's going to work too much at all. Trellises work in the valley maybe to keep the sun off you, but here trellises don't, or pergolas or something like that. If they were waterproof, where you could get underneath them in the winter and out of the rain, that would probably work. Just some comments.
Thank you.
But overall, I was really amazed at how much parking we need on this particular site. Is that something you and Derek talked about as far as parking requirements, or was that code requirements, Derek, that we're talking about?
No, actually, we didn't have a conversation about parking code requirements. So I'll let Emily kind of share with you kind of their thoughts.
Yeah, and Derek and Emily, just one second. We do want to talk a little bit about finances, and we have one more item that we need to discuss as part of this. So if we can kind of draw this discussion to a close, talk finances real quick, and then we need to talk about EV chargers briefly as well. So,
okay.
Sure.
Yeah, so just real quick, our architect looked at the code and put together the scheme based on the, I think the parking required ratios are pretty aggressive for this area, or But we can look at it again and kind of calc out what those, I think it was 80 to 115 spaces was kind of our range. So it is a lot of parking that would be required. But it's up for flexibility too.
Yeah, and I don't know that they had the benefit of the new food cart, food truck ordinance either, because that was just adopted. So.
Okay. Well, more stuff to look at. I'm going to move into Lorelei's section.
Lorelei. Hey.
You're all set.
Hi, everybody. Lorelei, good to see you all. Last time Emily and I were here with you, we had an initial conversation about big picture, all of the different projects that we might think about funding with the urban renewal funds that are remaining between now and 2025. And we promised that when we came back to you, we'd have some additional analysis around the amount of money that's actually available and some more specific thoughts about what choices are really in front of you. So that's what we're here to talk about now. And I did note the desire to move this relatively quickly, but this is kind of dense information. So please, I'm going to move quickly, but please don't hesitate to raise your hand and ask questions. Emily, can you go to the next slide for me? So we worked with Tiberius Solutions, a financial subcontractor who's done a lot of work for your city projecting TIF revenues in the past to update those projections. And he brought forward for us two scenarios. Scenario A is showing how much revenue would be available for you if you just spend the money as it comes in, essentially. We're calling that the pay-as-you-go scenario. And that gets us to just over $5 million between now and 2025. But he also looked at a second scenario where you take out an additional loan before 2025, and then he worked backward to figure out how quickly you would be able to pay that off, and came up with just under $9 million if you do that additional borrowing and the ability to pay that off over the course of two additional years beyond 2025. So we want to talk through with you what the implications of that choice might be for how many projects you might be able to fund. You know, it's obviously just under an additional $4 million roughly that you get with the borrowing. But there are, of course, some trade-offs on that with impacts to overlapping taxing districts. So we've got the two scenarios. I just described those. You get approximately $4 million roughly more if you go with scenario B. Those are not the only urban renewal funds that are available to you. You've also got the value of the property that you own at 35th. That's roughly $1.5 million, need an appraisal, but that could help with that specific development. And then you've been collecting rent from the church on 35th site, and that cash is also available to you. I'll go into the details of this on a separate slide in just a moment. But with the pay-as-you-go scenario, you can mostly fund most of the projects that you want to do, but maybe not quite to the level that you might prefer. With the additional amount, you can really fully fund those projects, and I'll go into those details in just one second. With scenario A, the pay-as-you-go scenario, you don't achieve your maximum indebtedness, so you're essentially leaving some money on the table. Your urban renewal plan has built into it a spending limit, that's the maximum indebtedness, and you won't have spent that full amount if you go with scenario A. But with scenario B, you optimize that and get to the full maximum indebtedness number. And then with scenario A, as I said, you return those tax dollars to overlapping taxing districts a couple of years faster. Emily, can you advance? Okay, this is detailed, but what this is showing is differences in how much you can fund with each of the scenarios. So as I said, with scenario A, you can mostly fund most of the projects. You don't have any additional cash available to help with the 35th site. You still have the value of the land, which could be used to help to underwrite and incent, but you don't have additional cash. I think the other thing to highlight is under scenarios, project C, you can fund a drain field, but not the full package treatment plant in the industrial sites near the airport. And in project D, You can achieve some benefit for fire suppression at the airport industrial sites, but not really the ideal. You're sort of hitting on adequate versus ideal with scenario A. With project E, that's the water pipeline under the bay. You can fund what we had estimated as a matching amount at $750,000 to a grant, but if that grant does not come through, you would not have sufficient funds to pay for the pipeline. With the additional borrowing, you could have the full amount to be able to fund that if the grant does not come through. With Project F, you would have some additional wayfinding, landscaping, ability to potentially fund additional or higher quality public art. With Project G, you could fund all of the priority trail connections and really complete the network for enhanced mobility for cyclists, pedestrians, multimodal connectivity. And then with Project H, with the additional cash from a potential borrowing, you would have the flexibility to address any unexpected project needs that go beyond the $1.5 million that's been estimated for that project. So I'm going to pause for just a moment and see if all of that makes sense, if you have any questions about any of the specific projects and the differences between scenario A and scenario B. I told you I was going to go fast.
I think my general recommendation.
These scenarios were not in our packet. Are they just being presented tonight?
Yep, that's correct. Yes.
Yeah, just for purposes of illustration of the funding situation, but my recommendation to the Urban Renewal Agency would be to bond to take full advantage of the district before it expires. I think we've got plenty of identified needs going forward, and this is kind of our last bite at the apple to really make some significant improvements to South Beach, and so again, my recommendation would be that we bond and take full advantage of the last 2 years of the Urban Renewal District as illustrated in the other alternative there.
I would just add that you would also have some flexibility in what that final bond amount would be. So for example, if the grant came through, you could bond for a smaller amount and pay off the loan more quickly.
The bond, who pays for that bond?
The urban renewal dollars would repay, the tax increment finance dollars would repay the bond.
Yep.
I thought we had to have everything, all debt paid off by 2027.
Right.
The plan actually says that you have to have the projects decided. I'm trying to remember what the exact language is.
But awarded.
Thank you. Awarded. It does not say that you have to have the debt paid off.
Is that true? Because we've been told all along that when the Urban Renewal District terminates in 2027, all debts have to be paid off.
Yeah, 2025 is the awarded date and 2027 is the payoff date, but the loan that you'd be taking out would be a short-term loan of like 2 years.
We bond to take full advantage of those last 2 years of the increments.
So that would be... That bonded debt would have to be paid off in 2 years then?
Correct.
Yeah, think about it. It'd be a bank loan probably, DMAR. A short-term bank loan would be.
Short-term bank loan?
It's probably
okay,
what you're looking
at. Maybe you can send the financial agreements out to satisfy all the questions now, and we can move on, please.
Are you shutting me up, Ryan?
No, but we have 10 minutes left in the meeting, and we have more topics. So I just thought, you know, we can talk about the debt structure later, can't we? I mean...
Thank you, Ken.
I'd like to get a copy of this presentation if I could.
Yeah, we'd all like to see that if we can get that emailed to us, Spencer.
Yep, no, we can certainly forward that on to you as well. And again, this is still in the building process. And I guess the general question is the council generally comfortable in taking advantage of the last 2 years of the increment, which would require a short-term loan or short-term bonding? Because the plan will look different depending on which option we go with. So is anyone object to taking full advantage of the last 2 years by borrowing?
As long as we have it paid off by 2027, I don't have a problem that, and then that money goes back into the general fund.
Correct. After 27.
Okay. I think we have what we need for this part of the agenda in that case. And we will send out the PowerPoint.
Cool. All right, Spencer.
Last thing we needed to chat about was the electric vehicle charging. As part of the urban renewal budget, there's $100,000 was appropriated out of the Northside Urban Renewal District, and there's $50,000 that's available in the line undergrounding account for South Beach in order to accommodate electric charging stations. The three locations that we have been looking at, and some of this has changed a little bit from our initial discussion, but one location would be at the Blockway side, and that's the location we've been looking at consistently. The second location we had talked originally about the Angle Street parking lot. What we're recommending at this point is that we do it in the City Hall parking lot behind City Hall. There's less interference with events that take place, such as the farmers market and other things on the Angle Street lot. The third location would be providing funding to the aquarium to help them establish their EV charging stations there. And we would commit an amount up to $50,000, depending on what they plan to put into that particular site at that location. The other change for the two city sites, which would be at the Blockway side and at City Hall. Originally, we were looking at level three chargers. During our discussions with the PUD and I think with Ryan Parker's thoughts on how the technology is changing with the level two chargers, we're now looking at the potential installation of level two chargers at City Hall and at the block wayside going forward. And if the council or the Urban Renewal Agency is comfortable with that strategy, then we're going to take steps to retain an electrician to work with PUD on this issue. I know Derek was up with the PUD at the wayside, I think, was that today or is that tomorrow, Derek?
No, today. Okay. I was just up there earlier today with Jake Pettis and one of their technicians. Just to get a sense of, you know, what their situation is up there, it's going to be relatively inexpensive to serve level two chargers at that location.
So conceptually, that's kind of the way plans have evolved. And Ryan, am I missing anything critical in that discussion that we've had?
Well, I guess as a city representative, I would certainly always welcome privately funded development of this technology, considered the federal discussions talking about a transition in fuel sources for the fleet of the future, so to speak. But the reality is that it's not currently being viewed as a mainstream option for a lot of people for a lot of reasons. However, I think the city could lead and provide these relatively inexpensive options for people to charge and have the charging station manufacturer service the stations to free up any FTE maintenance requirements that may occur should the city not go down that route. So I think start with these, you know, it would be capacity of four vehicle capacity at this point, and plus whatever the aquarium does. I think that's a good measurable step, and hopefully that'll be a template for expansion based on the success of those locations. But that's why I wanted to hold back and not put too many in at once in these locations and see how they do.
Is everyone comfortable with that strategy going forward? Thumbs up if you're good with that.
Well, I know we're short on time, but is this Blink, the company that you're talking about, and by us providing them as a long-range plan to have credit cards, or how's it?
Yeah,
we're not giving out free power, are we?
No,
it's app-based. The app charges the customer.
Right. And so, so basically it'd be part of the Blink network, and customers would pay for the power that they use. We're basically underwriting the costs of getting the equipment in place, and we'll have a contract with Blink to do the, to charge customers and to maintain the stations.
Now, how much does the city get out of this if we front end the cost on these Blink units?
Yeah, at this point we haven't worked through all those details. That's going to be the next step. If conceptually, if the council is comfortable with the going with the level two chargers at Block Wayside and here at City Hall.
I would only add that we'll bring forward information from at least one additional vendor. Blink may very well be the best one to go with, but you should have the information on at least another vendor or two as part of the process.
As long as if we're front-ending the cost, the city should get some financial reward for that. So that'd be my only concern. I'm not opposed to charging stations.
This is CM. I have a question just based on one thing that Derek just said. So for something like this, you're saying, hey, let's look at another charger. But I'm going back to something that happened a couple of months ago in our city council meeting when we had the electric scooter people. It was one electric scooter company. Should we have been opening that up to options?
Yeah, the electric scooter scenario is a little different than this because we weren't paying for anything. They were basically asking permission to operate. It wasn't an exclusive arrangement.
Okay.
So yeah. This is a purchase that we would make as a city. So it's a kind of a different scenario.
Okay.
So, yeah, you'll find the costs are very similar among companies. It's the deliverable product and the direct experience that guided me to this point. I've used chargers from a number of companies. Some have advantages. I mean, I prefer to use one that's made in the US or made with, you know, labor that's unionized. All those things are factors, but, you know, my direct experience with my EV that I'm leasing right now is that Blink is the best, but you can look to the hospital who used the Clipper Creek, which is based in California, and you can look to the aquarium or the Hatfield Science Building who used ChargePoint. So there's your three scenarios, and we can talk to those local officials here in town without having to reinvent the wheel as far as they can provide budgetary documents. They can do all that for us. I don't think city staff need to start from scratch on that.
So if everyone's comfortable with the direction, I think that's all we needed to know today, and we'll press on.
Any other questions before we adjourn?
Beatrice, did you get your hands up?
Yes, I have a question. I'm wondering, is any incentives available through the government for funding, for maybe anybody who wants to start something like this? Have you looked that information, Brian?
I guess I don't understand your question. What do you mean by starting something?
Yeah, like starting stations like this, the electric ones, is any incentives available that, to start like a something like this?
So most of the charging stations, if they're offered on private property, it's the utility that offers the biggest incentives. And then some, depending on the state you're in, there's a state Department of Energy credit, and there is a federal program through the Department of Energy at the federal level. However, this is more of an amenity the city would be offering rather than a service per se, because the service is provided by the actual charging station company on the app. Does that make sense? So one case study in Maryland, a guy decommissioned a gas station, got the Maryland DEQ to say that it wasn't polluted, and pulled all the gas pumps, and then had the PUD in wherever it was, DC or whatever, run, you know, hot leads in off the power pole, and he put in four fast chargers, and he operates like a gas station for EVs. Is that kind of what you mean? Because there's a federal program to set something like that up, but it has to occur completely on private property.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then the PUD would be the lead on dealing with that, helping that property owner get to that point if he or she wanted to develop something like that. I think that concept is going to become necessary and common in the future, but I think it's still early adoption of this technology. And so developers always like it when there's incentives rather than using 100% of their self-funding. And so I don't know that Oregon's even had those discussions between DOT, DEQ, and all that stuff is at this time premature.
I think this is generally kind of a bridging effort to, you know, as things roll out in the future, it'll help us get there. But I think, you know, I see this as kind of a bridge to whatever the future may be. And I don't see the city being in the electric charging business forever, you know, but we'll see how this evolves going forward. So maybe it'll be worth it all to be in it.
I'd be very interested, Spencer, when you do your negotiations on what the rate of return is and how fast these pay us back. If we're up 20 years to get a payback, it might not be worth it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be financially worth it for us. I think this was more bridging the gap in charging capabilities and identified as a priority by the council. But we'll have that information as we develop it going forward. So
remember, the people that have lots of time on their hands, for example, while the car is charging, walk to nearby businesses and support them. And you have to look at the overall economic activity too, is a big part of this technology. And I heard it from a reliable source that you have a couple of hours to kill, and that those hours that you have to kill can be very entertaining.
My only comment to that, Ryan, is that we should be giving away gas and too, if we're going to be giving away electricity.
Okay, well, the direction we've had to this point is to go forward with this project, but it'll be bringing information back to the council for action going forward in the future. But again, we're looking at level twos, two locations, and then assisting the aquarium with the installation of electric chargers at that location is the direction.
I guess I'll entertain a motion to adjourn at this point.
I move to adjourn. This is PM.
Any seconds?
Second.
Okay, a motion was made by Councillor Hall, seconded by Councillor Collette. All those in favor? Great.
Aye.
Urban renewal meeting for September 20th is adjourned.
Okay, and we'll take a few minutes before we start the regular meeting.
We will start the city council meeting at 15 after. We'll take a 10-minute break, so we'll start at 6:15. Thank you all.
Are we still on? Hey, Ryan.